Hello and welcome to the Answered Podcast. My name is Paweł Burza and I am joined by Sebastian Kalemba.
Hello everyone, thanks Burza. And today we're going to talk about VFX with veterans Alisa Zarate, who is art director and environmental supervisor, and Albert Szostkiewicz, who is an R&D supervisor and VFX supervisor altogether.
Like you said, they have so much experience, so much to share, and this conversation was just incredible. They have an outlook on everything and on the whole industry, from big movies like Dune to smaller projects, games, and others. Can't wait for you to check it out, so let's jump straight into it. All right, Alisa, Albert, welcome to the podcast. Simple as that. How are you guys doing?
First of all, thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Our pleasure.
We are doing great. And I'm a little bit hot. It's very hot in Poland right now. I'm melting.
Can you guys introduce yourselves, especially for people listening to this, so they can hear your voice and kind of understand who you are? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay, I go first. I'm Alisa Zarate. I'm currently an environment supervisor and art director working in the film, visual effects and animation industry. And I'm also a co-founder of the VFX Mentor, offering training and one-on-one mentorships to industry professionals, basically to upskills and students looking to get into the industry. Yeah, I have worked in the industry for 20 years now. So
wow.
Yeah.
Loads of experience.
It's scary. Journey. It's a journey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. Albert?
So, my journey's also quite long, I have to say. Also around 20, 25 years. I have no idea. I stopped counting. But anyway, my name is Albert Szostkiewicz. I'm trying not to Americanize my surname just yet. It's not easy to pronounce. I've been working on a multiple different positions. Quite recent, I was working as a visual effects supervisor. Recently, I'm working as, R&D supervisor.
R&D supervisor.
Yeah, it's nice. A cryptic and very nice title.
Very nice.
Yeah. Sounds really cool.
Probably you won't be able to tell us anything about this.
Yeah.
What's behind it?
I can tell you a little bit.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Awesome. But sounds pretty cool. Especially nowadays, when everyone actually is trying to find its own kind of secret sauce.
Yeah. It's a niche, right?
Yeah. Niche, exactly.
Like, look what happened, right, over the last years when it comes to the project's identity. Like, you know, you could spend millions for R&D, but suddenly, you have Spider-Verse, let's say, for example, that, you know, made a couple of tricks to you know, find the secret sauce when it comes to the look dev and animation on 2s, on 3s, even on 4s, with the recent hops, Spider-Verse. And you have it. It sounds, of course, easy. It's super tough. But this R&D sounds a bit suspicious.
And interesting.
Yeah, very interesting, very intriguing. So yeah, I have to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
Maybe you can say something more. But yeah.
It's a very broad term, I have to say, because yes, R&D can mean almost everything.
Yeah.
Right now it's an R&D mostly related to workflows and pipeline.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies that benefit of the broader knowledge that we have, because we literally came from so many different countries.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell a small anecdote. Because I'm from Poland. She grew up in New Zealand. We met in Australia, and therefore we live in Canada.
Interesting.
Very international.
Yeah, that's true. Good story. Yeah. That's the journey. But you live in Canada right now.
Yes.
And it seems that when it comes to VFX, that's the place, right?
Yeah.
That's whatever, that's the big movies are happening
the
there.
Yeah. It's the hub there. And also because it's the same time zone, especially for Vancouver, because the time zone is exactly the same as Los Angeles, where most of the production houses are. So it makes sense to be there for now. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question about now and and like
and
then.
Before,
yeah,
right?
Because it was, of course, on the way to now. There was a pandemic. It changed mm-hmm. everything. First of all, it globalized the market a lot. Mm-hmm. Secondly, hybrid or full remote, like in your case, it's not a strange situation. It's just absolutely normal. And can you elaborate a little bit? Because as you said, and maybe tell us a bit about your journey. Yeah, as you said, like 20 years ago and now, like how, you know, did you start? When? Where?
How did I start? Well, I did start in Poland. I did start by working in games. I believe that my first, at least, attempt to work in the industry, or even on Game Boy Advanced.
Nice. I had one.
Right? I was really fascinated by all the computers since I was just a little boy. It all started just thanks to one computer magazine called Amiga. Mm-hmm. I was just so captivated by what it offers. And I knew that this is really what I wanted to do. So, yeah, my journey started in Poland. I used to work mostly in the post-production houses, in a few post-production houses in Poland. And I did love it. But Poland back then, which was years ago, was definitely not famous for making movies. Mm-hmm. And that was something that at some point of making mostly like commercials, I felt like I would love to try that. And it was actually pretty hard to get to that point, because even when I approach any of the recruiters and I said, hey, I would love to make a movie, they were looking at my portfolio and was like, well, yeah, but you've been working on commercials, so maybe talk to those guys. I'm like, no, I want to work on a movie. Mm-hmm. I'm like, show us something movie related. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I do not have anything movie related. That's why I would love to work with you. So it was tough, but thankfully, one of the companies decided to give me a chance. And I just went. And it was so spontaneous, really. I was so excited. And I didn't even thought that where exactly I'm going. Mm-hmm. I literally first left Poland to go on the other side of the world, on the exact antipode, you can say. I just moved to Australia. And that was a culture shock and a beginning of an amazing journey that just never stopped. It was like a drug, I have to say. Yeah, yeah. Like you go once and it's like, I want more. How about here? How about now? And I was jumping like from different country to country.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the company in Australia?
That was Rising Sun Pictures.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you know, straight at the beginning, when I was trying to get my job outside, first of all, I sent my portfolio like everywhere. And I was just like, you know, it was like fishing, just trying to check where exactly I'll manage to catch something. And by pure luck, two companies approached me. They just reacted to my CV, my demo reel that I have sent them, and I had a choice. I could work on a project called Happy Feet or Harry Potter. And to be honest, both were very amazing, but you know, everybody was like, oh, Harry Potter, amazing. Well, I just decided to go with a Harry Potter direction, and that was my first project outside a typical work I have been doing before.
That's quite big. Nice. Also, right?
Yeah,
that was amazing. It was like, you know, like being thrown right in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Awesome. Scary as well.
Yeah, but also a big learning experience, right? That's where you kind of started to really get into it. But also I kind of feel like it must have been a little bit intimidating in the beginning, or not? Or were you very, very like confident getting into it?
I was not confident at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it always felt like whenever you watch those demo reels of the people from that work on the movies, you don't realize that most of those demos are actually made by hundreds of people. It's not like I, as one person, did everything. And it's not obvious, especially for me, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I was not aware. And going there, I felt this kind of a weird emotions. I knew that those people are very talented and very experienced. And I just came from city in Poland here. Just like, I felt like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, why even you guys decided to pick me? So it felt very intimidating, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And another thing, it was just like also a language barrier. Because, you know, I learned the English language like we have been learning at school.
Yeah.
Because in Poland, English is not the first or second language. It was more like an optional thing.
Exactly.
So I've been learning here and there. So I knew a little bit of English. But then speaking in English for 8 hours, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
Like, I really had the migraines after work.
No, I'm not surprised.
It's just like my brain had to
processing all
translate
the time.
It was so exhausting. So, yeah, it wasn't that easy, and it was very intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
But that time, even getting a visa for, you know, I believe it was possible. But currently, if you are, let's say, a person out of the industry, and I even have a demo reel,
mm-hmm.
applying to Rising Sun, Animal Logic, you name it, right? In Australia, it's like impossible to get a job right now. It's so many people right now that are, you know, like it's like currently, I believe, like I know a few persons that have been rejected just because of, you know, like, forget about that. We have so many people waiting for this job here.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier, right? Back then, it's easier to learn right now. So, like back then you had Gnomon School or things like that. And
the DVD days.
Yeah, it was just more like if somebody released a single tutorial, like everybody jumped on it. It was like everybody knew every single tutorial that was out there on the internet. Like literally, if you heard about Alan McKay releasing his tutorials, like everybody knew it. Yeah. Everybody knew it by heart and everybody watched it probably. Yeah. Today, it's infinite
amount of information. Infinite.
You cannot digest it, right?
Yeah, it's hard to process all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which is impossible. Good and bad at the same time, because the quality of some of them is you know, they are not moderated, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, well, you want to make a tutorial? Sure, just go ahead. Just turn on, you know, YouTube, press recording, done.
Mm.
So it's good in a way, because we have such an amazing access to learning materials, but the quality is not always the best. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, but same with blending, right? From the game, as you said, you started in the game industry, and then you actually, your dream was actually following the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And even this blend between these two industries was really exotic. Like over that time. Right now, people jump back and forth so easily. Those like both industries are really blended.
Mm-hmm.
Both
are now like borrowing from one another. Yeah. I know there's also like in the gaming industry, the overall outlook is to kind of borrow a lot from the film industry.
Yeah, we use the same softwares also. Yeah. I remember like even 10 years ago, like forget about using Houdini, let's say, in games, like forget about that. Right now you can bake it, you can do Alembic, you can do whatever, you can import it in scene and make it happen. And like, so yeah, like that's actually cool, because that gives you more opportunities. But still, it rises even much more the bar of the pool of talent, right? Mm. Because it requires right now more skill, I believe, than it used to.
Yeah.
But you know, like there's always two sides of the coin, right?
True.
Yeah.
I think I can add to that. I would say that back then, let's say 20 years ago, when we were making games, They were cool, but it was more like a interesting entertainment where, like, we could have just created, hey, let's make a game tomorrow, mm-hmm. and, you know, one person could make a game and it could be a hit, mm-hmm. which is great. While movies was a huge collaboration of screenwriters, of directors, and really, really hard and long thought process to make it right. Now this industry changes, right? Because the games are getting better in a way that we want this film look. We want mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. really hard thinking process in to put into that. So like you said, our tools are right now interchanging.
Yeah.
Like you guys in games could use the tools that we've been using in movies, but at the same time, VFX is using tools that are used in games.
Yeah.
Like Unreal
exactly.
is right now uh-huh. more often used in VFX.
Yeah.
So I think that at some point, like those two roads will actually cross,
yeah.
because you'll be able to watch the movie and play the character at the same time. Yeah. It's not that far off. I think there are already this kind of ideas and tries to do so. It's just getting better and better.
Yeah. It's making everything more interactive also in this case. That'll be amazing.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was already a series on Netflix, right? That you pick the character.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And then it basically ultimately tells the story how you pick,
and you make the choices and then you see the outcomes happening. Yeah.
It was more interactive. From Black Mirror.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Interesting. You know? And as far as I know, they tripled the budget of the single episode with that particular one to make all the choice and consequences, right?
But it gives more engagement to whatever you're watching focusing on your phone or doing mm-hmm. like people now do multitasking, right?
Exactly.
Instead of focusing on the things they watch. But But Unreal has been a big kind of step forward. For me, like the biggest eye opener was I didn't know that, you know, after watching Mandalorian that everything in the background was like generated in Unreal. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then you see kind of like the technology behind it. You're like, well, we don't really like, you can put anything in the background that you want. Like you want Tatooine, you got Tatooine. You want something else, you got it. Like,
The
sky's the limit.
Yeah. More interactive that way, right?
Yeah.
And the actors could actually feel like they are in the physical location rather than seeing a black, you know, green or blue screen.
Yeah. It's incredible.
The idea is not new. Like the matte painting was for many years to paint all the backgrounds. The distance,
usually 360, and a lot of people didn't realize that we paint a lot of the painting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. That's. I remember actually I've been attending GDC like 2016. Mm. There was a lecture of like from two guys from XLab from ILM,
yeah.
mm-hmm. and I remember their challenge was then it was like 8 years ago already. Their challenge over there was to reproduce two shots for Rogue One completely in real time. And they did it. And I as far as I know, they've been using Unreal then. Or Unity, I think Unreal, and they were like showing it and comparing it next to each other. It was almost the same. The only thing that really stand out, like it was liquids, of course, because there's one shot when the X-Wing is going crazy, like, you know, just above the surface of the water. Yeah. And, you know, there's always splashes and stuff. Yeah. So, of course, liquids in real time, it's a pain in the ass in general. But you know, right now it's way better, of course, like 8 years in this world is like a decade, more than a century, man. It's like look what happened with real time right now. But that's also interesting that they are pushing for it. Yeah, in the end, ultimately it will cut cost, right? Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. true.
Yeah, big time.
But you know, it's I also noticed this weird phenomenon that sure we are getting more amazing tools allowing us to do something faster, more interactive. But at the same time, we are losing craft.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because the tools are becoming simpler and simpler, mm-hmm. and we are just getting lazier and lazier.
We're just becoming operators, basically.
Yeah.
That's true. Because I have to say, like, for example, when you gave this example of the X-Wing going over the water, Not long time ago, one of the biggest sand movie that we did, we also had some spaceships flying over the water. And that is not a fluid simulation. Mm-hmm. That is just, thoughtful process of how to use a simpler tools to make it believable.
Exactly.
Right? And that's what, people have been doing for last, 20 years. Like, you watch Terminator 2. Till today, it looks amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And if you would ask anyone today... Version.
Yes.
Yeah, but if you ask anyone today to replicate exactly the same effect, they would need like a computer with 256 gigabytes because they probably wouldn't be able to render it.
Yeah.
Because there is this laziness and kind of a simplification for artists. I get that. And I appreciate that. Yeah. But also losing that craft.
Yeah. I think it's also a lot of times it's like people are getting impatient, like production time is getting less and less. Like back in the days, like 20 years ago, when I was on the project, it takes like few years, like 3-4 years to make a film. Now 6 months, to produce something. So I think that's a change that I feel like we need to slow down a little bit to bring back the quality, but I'm not the person to say it.
Yeah.
But as a person, as an art director, right? Like this is something that you can educate the clients about it. Like, look, we could slow down a little bit and spend more time on the quality. It makes it more memorable. Absolutely. Can you think about a movie that recently you watched that sticks with you forever, right? And versus all the movies that you've been watching that is kind of like rushed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because this is like right now, like this quantity over quality. Yeah. Like there's so many people that are actually binging things like every single day.
Consumerism.
Consumers, exactly. So, but I think there is this tendency to a little bit, it's stopping a little bit because I don't want to use names and stuff, but, there are some quality stuff is happening right now. And you can tell that, okay, it took more years, like more time, but at least the impact that it has on the community, like, it's way higher.
It's bigger,
like, quality always stays.
Yeah. I will say Dune, for sure. That's a great example. And it's a project that you got to work on, and you can really tell. Like, you can tell, like not only is it faithful to what was in the books, and it portrays everything, but also the style of it.
The cinematography the style, there. The production design. It's
just...
Yeah, there was incredible. A vision.
It's a feast. It's a feast for eyes. It's a feast, intellectual feast.
You can definitely see the quality, right? Yeah. And also the passion that
you
puts into it.
You can rewatch it like multiple times.
Yeah.
And just and you, every single time, I just rewatch this, like, I don't know, 5 times already. And I,
you
every
keep
single.
Noticing something new.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. This is so much detail, so much. I mean, like, that's it. That's exactly. And I believe that's gonna win. That the quality always wins. I really believe in it.
Yeah, I think people just need to take a step back a little bit and, rather than rushing it through. And that's why I really love seeing independent filmmaker coming out now rather than having big studio production because these independent filmmaker really think about the thought process. Yeah. Like Jibaro or The Witness from Alberto Mielgo.
Yeah.
I watch it over and over again, even though it's a short film. It felt like there's so much quality and
care.
The
best episodes from anthologies.
Exactly, to put into it. So but it's slowly I'm starting to see more filmmakers coming out, like giving that sort of quality. Yeah. And it's really heartwarming to see that because these people are the future of the industry, right? So we need to support them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
True craftsmanship. And actually going back and doing stuff,
But with the thought process behind it. Back in the days, that because of the tools, I'm even talking about, animators doing stuff on paper. Like, because the process was slower and because it cost you so much, you had to make a mindful choice. The whole process were like forcing it on you to really rethought multiple times before you put the first line.
Exactly.
And currently, as we let even computers to, let's say, I said it today once, like to animate by themselves, for example, because the interpolation is so cheap, right? It can, set to poses, but the all the in-betweens are also poses, right? Like those are also frames, are also paintings. Needs to be mindful and needs to be like coherent. Because you have to favor this or favor that. You have to skip this or skip that. This is what I love, for example, in the Spider-Verse, because this decision of actually animating on two fours and, like, you know, multiple layers when it comes to animation is a very handcrafted. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, you have a 3D, but the approach was completely 2D. Mm-hmm. Was like 2D. Every single frame was a painting, is a painting. And like regarding Dune, like you watch, you listen to interviews with Denis Villeneuve, whatever, like anyone from that production. And this one thing that repeats constantly is that whenever they had doubt, whenever they had question mark, they've been getting back to the source material.
Yeah.
There is an answer. You can read it 10 times and you will not find it, but trust the process, trust the book, you will find it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At some point you will find, and this is amazing because like you have Denis Villeneuve, the guy who was like, you know, one of the top directors nowadays. And the guy's humble, you know? Yeah. He trusts the process. Yes. Like, that's amazing, right?
It's just the care that he puts into it too, right? Like, back in the days, like 20 years ago, I was an on-set, like set designer, right? You don't just come up with something on C80 on a whim, and you know, and just get the carpenters or set builders to build it.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time and effort to research and develop, you know, the style of the buildings, the environment. I remember going to the National Library looking for a particular book because that book is the Bible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole pre-production process was a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're making sure the material is right. Yeah. You put it in camera to see if it's capturing the texture right. And then you reference it back to the old photography that you get. That these days, everything is built with a computer. Yeah. Model it in Maya.
Yeah.
We don't care. You know, we just build it and then we fix it in post.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is taking a lot of the filmmaking, you know, like the care, the love, you know, away from the artistry of the whole magic of filmmaking.
Yeah.
That's why I love watching old films because for me, there's so much care. You see it, right?
Yeah.
Even Encounter of the Third Kind, you know, that the volcano that they were using, you know, it is a miniature model. They spend time sculpting it, right? And then they put it in plate. So I'm really hopeful that this younger generation, they're getting more, you know, into using their own hands and building models and sets rather than using computer. I mean, computers is great. I mean, it comes with a lot of...
it's a tool.
It's a tool. Yeah. It's groundbreaking. Yeah. You see a lot of magic happening, but my dream is to see the magic happening with the computers together with the old styles of filmmaking.
The true craftsmanship.
Yeah.
That would be my dream project. Yeah. So if anyone is working on that, please let me know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So guys, you said about like this impatience, like that you deal with many people. You are supervisors, right? You are directors. So like, and you deal with people, right? A lot. Do you spot or do you actually, how do you deal with that the person that actually is so much rushing the process that you see that it has to, you know, it will be, you know, they will make a mistake or they will hit the wall because of rushing, because of non-mindful approach. And how do you deal with this impatience? Like,
unfortunately, sometimes the best way to prevent it is to let it happen.
That's true.
Right? Like,
that's true.
I was talking about burnout earlier today, and, you know, I suffered it, and then I recovered. Well, I'm still recovering from it, but it actually put me in a different perspective. Like, because we are both teaching right now, a lot of the younger generations, they're in their 20s, like so young, so full of energy.
Yeah.
They're rushing every single day. They're, they're so obsessed with social media, for example, wanting to post every single day because that's the algorithm, right?
Yeah.
You have to post to get more followers.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, does it really matter? These are all strangers. It could be bots liking it, you know, you don't know, but you shouldn't be rushing, you know, you should actually take time, digest the process and stop being so aggressive about it, right? The impatient, I think, kills a lot of professions in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you get burnout faster, you get more anxiety attacks, you know, these days you're seeing people burn out so much faster than before because they just didn't know how to stop. They didn't know how to process it.
Plus it's always chasing some
it's
results.
Pressure. Like, yeah, it's always, a pressure. The constant, you know, the comparison, you know, you know, like if somebody is doing work next to me, it's, oh, you know, I want to copy and do better.
Yeah,
you know, I have to be better than this person.
Yeah.
I think that's a very negative and toxic way of thinking, rather than doing it this way, how about finding this person and say, wow, I really admire your work.
Yeah.
I want to learn from you, right? That's creating a healthier lifestyle and healthier creative habits.
Yeah.
And like for example, I'm not an effects artist. Sometimes I ask Albert, it's like bouncing idea, you know, not because I'm an art director, I know everything, right? Sometimes I ask my junior artists, like, how do you do certain things? Because I haven't touched this program for a while because I'm so out of touch. You know, you learn from each other. And with Albert, it's like, I want to do this effects, but I have no idea how to do it, right? So instead of being impatient and rushing through it, just imagining what I put on the paper, I research, ask the expert, right? Ask the expert. That's the key.
Yeah, also learning from others and kind of like pulling from their experiences is incredible, because sometimes you don't even know how much you can actually cut corners and learn from someone quicker without doing all the legwork. Like someone can really guide you through a process. But I think what's also important is, like, you know, taking that and applying it to your stuff and then kind of trying to come up with like a combination of all these things and, you know, defining what you are and what your style is, for example.
I will also add a little bit different part of the rushing. Like, I noticed that right now we have a junior artist mostly that would love to open a program, let's say Houdini, and just press the button and have amazing explosion. And I think this is where those tools are being simplified. This is that circle that, that we are running around, right? And because those companies are trying to accommodate for what they are trying to achieve. So we currently have literally situation where you can today open program like Houdini, press the shelf button and have amazing explosion. So this is us rushing and simplifying and trying to get straight to the point. While back then, which I'm going to compare, it sounds like an old person right now.
Back in my days.
You know, it's a craft where it's actually a combination of art and science, where people were studying in Academy of Fine Arts, let's say, how to draw, how to sculpture. And you could combine all this knowledge, the technical knowledge, maybe with the programming, the artistic knowledge, and try to make something amazing out of it, to understand the process rather than just hit the button and have it
real
done.
Real alchemy, right?
And this is where we're actually going with all the other tools like AI, because this is what people want to have. Just press the button and it's done. This is the patience.
Like for example, I can give a perfect example. Like one of the older matte paintings I did, it took me 2 months to do, you know, because there's so much details into it. And these days people just want to be fast, you know, how can I cut out the background faster? You know, how can I paint the mountains faster? And then they just use whatever tools, Unreal, whatever, render out a pass and cut it out and put it. I was like, but there's no creativity into it. You know, there's no care, you know, like I don't feel proud if I do something like this. You know, obviously, you know, being with the industry trend, we have to adapt, but you still have to care. Even though if you use 3D models, you still need to mindfully place where everything should be, composition, lighting, you know, does it tell a story? Is it too busy? Now, one thing I really love about Denis working with this production designer, Patrice Vermette, is that his production design is so simple, you know, it's non-cluttered. Like, seriously, I'm such a big fan. Like, if I see him, I would be like fangirling. But it's just how he actually managed to compose an image and tell a story at the same time. You don't even need to read the script. You kind of like know what's exactly happened. And I feel like this is exactly where filmmakers should pay attention. Like, instead of cluttering your shot with so many items, so many things.
Simplifying it.
Simplifying. Yeah. I'm actually all about minimalist simplicity and does it tell a story?
Yeah.
Three things, right? So,
less is more.
Yeah, because sometimes we have less, you actually, you make the whole picture just stand out more. Yeah. Like, it tells a story in a more simple way instead of just like boom, 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 like too many things happening, right?
Exactly, like Michael Bay way, right? Like, you want people, generally, you want people to care. right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You cannot overdose with emotions. There's one core emotion in a shot, one core conflict in the shot, right? Like, and you have to simplify things to be able to actually get and extract this particular emotion in that very moment, right? Mm-hmm. And exactly, like, being smart, tunneling, like, being precise is exactly the way, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely agree. Yeah. Absolutely agree.
Less is more. And I really like empty space. People get so scared of empty space, but empty space is the best friend
good.
In making film, you know, because it hones your focus and, you know, you just go straight for it. Like for our students, right, when whenever we teach environment art or whatever, they put everything in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they're so busy. I don't know where to focus. It's like your trees, mountains, clouds, everything, characters, like tiny little thing. And I didn't even know this character sometimes. So it's like, I don't know where to focus. And I was like, why is it so busy? It's like, oh, because there's an empty space. I don't want to leave any empty space. I think that's the fear of having empty space.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right?
Like, yeah. I think like nowadays, because of these tools and because of this rush and this culture that people are like... kind of addicted on dopamine, kind of, you know what I mean? Because as many likes you get, the more happy you are.
Yes.
But exactly, what are the likes, right? They're meaningless. You don't even know these people, right? Like, at least most of them. It's like, yeah, it requires the courage and some kind of like, you know, to switch off everything.
Yeah.
Takes time, takes knowledge, I have to say. You have to understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's why quite often I really appreciated motion graphics where people could just create something amazing just by few spheres and few blocks, and you can just make a beautiful picture.
Yeah, rhythm, right?
Yeah,
Like exactly that.
Digestible in an easy way, and also something that invokes some type of emotion in you is just incredible.
Like when it comes to Dune, right? It's visually, right?
Oh man,
I can give you an example where. One of the shots was creating a laser, and just then he said, just make the most boring, simple
beam
you've ever seen, because it's about the simplicity. So people won't just overdo it like, you know, like magic or whatever. Yeah. No, just simple. It has to tell the story. It's not here to steal the magic of the shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's, exactly. Right. Yeah. It's exactly. It's a tool. In that very moment, right?
Yeah.
That's there should be classes about simplicity. You know what I mean?
Right? If there's one, I would love to attend.
How to make it less cluttered, like less stuff, bringing it more to the simple.
How to
look.
Calm down, actually. Take it easy, right? Yeah. Like and make things simple.
Like kids, right? When you have Lego blocks, right?
Yeah.
Those big Duplo kids. I think, you know, it actually, we can learn a lot from that.
Less pieces.
Less pieces, but bigger. You can still make a lot of interesting shapes out of it. So
That's true.
During Art for All, you had your presentation and you showed your newest showreel. There is this one scene, and I think we'll stick to Dune here. There is this example of where you have the spice collector, and it's going through the sand, and the sand is vibrating, and you have like the Sadukar who are kind of protecting this thing. And then... You feel like something is shaking, and this big worm, it just fills the whole frame. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful because it's like there's so much simplicity in that shot, and the play with the colors, like the sand and the dust are pretty much being the same color. And then
rewatch it again.
Yeah, they're wearing the dark armor, like all these things combined is just such a nice shot.
Yeah.
And there's not too many colors. There's not too many things happening.
Simple.
It's simple, but it's also so raw and so good.
I love all his movies, to be honest, with Denis' movies, like The Arrival. It's, it's so simple that even the shape of those, you know, alien spaceship. It's just a simple shape. Mm-hmm. And every other movie is just like 1,000 blinking.
And a million things here.
You're like, does it even matter? You know, all those other things.
Yeah. Like even I forget the name of the planet in the second part of the Dune. That was like very overburned with the...
Overburned? That's a Sadukar.
And then I was thinking like, why is it so bright? Like, I forget the source material. I've read Dune like 10 years ago, right? Last time. And then I was Googling after it, like, why? Why? Because for sure, every single choice, there is a meaningful choice. Like, yeah. It's not, there's nothing like a meaningless experiment. There's a meaning behind it. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a pretty simple explanation, because it is super close to the sun, mm-hmm. and that's why there's like
super bright.
And you had these guys with this white skin, and they are like oversaturated, and it works so well,
It's a visual beauty, just looking at it, having everything in black and white, but also like very, very light. Mm-hmm. It simplifies the colors are very simple, but they paint an incredible picture like in your head. And also it feels like very, very alien because we're talking about the Harkonnens, right? Mm-hmm. And Fade Rotha, mm-hmm. when you see him for the first time on this Colosseum, mm-hmm. when he mm-hmm. comes out, like there's a lot of things happening around, but him and actually the people that he's supposed to fight with is very, it's just simple, but it's good. But
every
good.
Frame is a painting.
Yes. Every frame is a painting. Yes. And that all comes down to research and development mm-hmm. as well, right? Like before you shoot something like this, before you come up with this kind mm-hmm. of concept, you have to understand how the world works too. Yeah. Like physically correct, right? Like if your planet is so close to the sun, you can imagine what sort of environment it is going to be. It's not going to be lush or anything right? Like compared to a planet that has no sun, what's going to be like?
Exactly. You know, it's kind of like a barren wasteland almost. Yeah,
exactly. Guys, we are at Promised Land Festival. Yeah, we are uniting in art. Yes. It's not your first one. You know that people come here for inspiration, for networking. They look for tips and tricks. Mm-hmm. And you deal so much with also new artists, young people,
aspiring
students, aspiring. Yeah. Is there any trend or anything that you share as your like wisdom, that you share with your students, that you could share with people that will watch this podcast?
Yeah, I would say be patient. Mm-hmm. Like be patient is one of the habits mm-hmm. that even myself, you know, took a long time to acquire. Because when you're young, you have a lot of energy mm-hmm. and all you wanted to do is just run. You know, you keep mm-hmm. running, you don't know how to stop. Sooner or later, you're going to run out of fuel. So rather than keep running so fast, 1,000 miles an hour, you should slow down mm-hmm. and keep your creative flames burning for a longer time.
Steady cadence.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Being steady and for the longevity, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Rather than going so fast at lightning speed suddenly at 30, you're like, can't do it anymore.
It's like running a marathon. You need to, first half needs to be not too fast and then later you can try to go faster for a negative split. But if you go straight into it in a sprint, then you're not going to last till the end, right?
And patience and I think finding a good mentor, you know, preferably mm-hmm. somebody who's been in the industry for a long time that could actually tell you to slow down, right? Because I know
very
that
they're eager from the start.
Yeah, it's very
right?
eager from the start. I mean, I look up to a lot of like older, you know, like others, like mm-hmm. Ian McCaid, for example, mm-hmm. you know, who I believe he's retired now, mm-hmm. but he takes life so differently right now, right? Compared to some of the others that we've been watching and they constantly just create new stuff. And sometimes the style are changing. Like, whoa, what's happening? Right. But they are very talented. I don't mind that. But being patient and finding the right mentor that's in your same vibe and style is my, you know, kind of advice.
That's basically a very good one, because these two things are really add to each other. Because I tend to talk to sometimes to aspiring artists, and when I say that, tell them that, hey, be patient, mm-hmm. trust the process. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They tell, easy to say because you work already in the industry. Yeah. I'm like, all right, I've heard that. But whatever you create, at least make it tailored down to the place you want to work for, mm-hmm. or like, and honestly, focus on 3 up to 5 pieces, no more than that. Yeah. Right, and then that's why you should be patient. Like find a mentor, find a place, like make a meaningful choice. Because people are over rushing stuff. Like they create a animation shot, acting shot, but the acting is meaningless. Like why do you actually move this whole hands around the shot? Mm-hmm. It's meaning like these people, like people do not talk to like that. Like it's not a ratatouille in that very moment, right? Like it doesn't look at least like ratatouille style, right? So again, exactly like mentor. for sure the meaning also and the patience, like these things, right? Just to make sure that people will not say, yeah, patience, uh-huh. That says Alice, who spent 20 years in the industry, right?
And while they are trying to really get in, put their foot in the door, and they're doing, and they're constantly like charging to get in.
Patience, and they're like, but there's competition, I have to be first, right?
Yeah.
Well, being patient, sometimes if you create, you know, spend more time creating the artwork that looks amazing, you know. I personally hired somebody who had 3 pieces of amazing artwork because of what I saw, right? Exactly. Versus somebody who has 50 or 60 different art pieces.
Exactly.
And there's no style to it. And, you know, there's just no composition. It's just, I don't know, like they create visual candy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it didn't mean anything to me, right? Yeah. So, for, you know, or somebody who has tons of followers on Instagram versus somebody who has only 12, right? Because they spend so much time focusing on things that truly, truly matter to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than following the trend. self-promotion. Yeah.
Like Feng said, that every single picture right now with environment is just environment and a guy in a front.
Yes. That's very true. Yes, that's very true. People spend too much time rendering, you know, rather than telling a story, I think. Yeah.
Classic concept. Human for size,
or castle on the mountains.
Yes,
I'm still seeing it until today.
That's true.
And my whole talk was actually about that. What I would like to say to the young generation, because I did that whole reflection about what I have learned and what I wish I knew 20 years ago, and I have to say that I came to conclusion and. It took me a while before I came to that conclusion. What you guys are saying, but I dissected it even more. I think that it's important to understand that we have to broaden our understanding of art. Because like right now, like you're saying, we are rushing. We're just like, hey, I want to become an effects artist. Just I'll download this program, I click a button, and I want to have an explosion. Sure, you technically can do it, and everybody can do it, and everyone will do exactly the same, but nobody would understand it. I think it's important to know that art is not just so narrow. We have to broaden up, open up. I would say, even if somebody wants to be an effects artist, and I'm talking about effects because I've dealt with effects for quite many years, just go and draw, paint, make photos. Because that would also teach you that every of this medium will force you for a little bit different way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. Like when you make photos, hopefully that would force you to think about the composition.
Mm-hmm.
When you draw, hopefully that would make you think about light and shadow.
Mm-hmm. And proportions as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And then hopefully you can see the picture that even if you want to do effects, that's also at the end a flat image that we are going to see at the cinema, at the TV. It doesn't matter if it's painted. It doesn't matter if it was done in Houdini. Nobody cares. If you watch a movie, it's like everybody, oh yeah, this is done in this program and this is done in this program. Nobody cares. Yeah. It's about how it looks like, what's the story, what's the emotion that it evokes.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter what kind of artist you want to be. You have to understand and feel what you're doing. And I think this is what's important, which ties up what you guys are saying. Like, yes, slow down, understand what you're doing. And it's easy to say, just understand. That's why I'm saying that broaden up your knowledge. Go and explore, try different mediums.
Be humble. It requires patience, and humble, because you need to study simply. Like, look at, the old paintings from masters, in hell, 16th century, and how they dealt with light.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. Nowadays, you look at this, having in mind the context, of course.
Mm.
Oh, it's still mind-blowing, right? So absolutely agree.
I like going back to craft and also going back to the basics and looking into things, how taking photos and stuff
Be curious, actually, right?
And actually being curious, but also testing different things, drawing and things like that. It's craft, which people are now not really thinking much about because everything is digitalized.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you think about it, it really, you can really pull a lot from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, I really like what you said about being humble too, because that's another big thing. Yeah, like patience, humble, and getting a mentor, right? It's like I learned it the hard way from myself, from my personal experience. And I'm starting to basically, about 5-6 years ago, I think I changed my way of looking at things, right? I may have a lot of experience, years of experience in the industry, but I don't know anything, you know? But I don't know everything, I should say.
Yeah.
And especially when you are in a leadership position, it's your responsibility to set an example.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm supervising or leading a team, I told my team, I'm part of you guys. I'm part of the rower. We are on the same boat, right? I don't know everything, but you know, if you ask me a question I don't know, I'm going to make sure that I find it out for you. Just be vulnerable about it. Yeah. I think your whole team will basically help you.
They
you
also
know?
Appreciate that.
They will also appreciate you. And they see that you're patient. Like that. They see that you are eager to learn. And then this is what's guiding the younger generation to say, okay, if Alyssa is doing that, I'm not doing anything wrong by asking a question.
Exactly.
Of course.
So I think, being humble is also very, very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are scared, right? Because like people think that if you ask the question, that means that you are, you know, maybe inexperienced.
Lacking the knowledge.
This person didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that's actually a different way of thinking that we have learned over working in those different companies, that it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. Like even as a supervisor, I very much more appreciate person that asks the question than a person that does not. Because two of those persons may encounter the same issues, but the person that never asked the question will struggle. And the person that did ask the question, I'm happy to help. I'm happy to show. I'm happy to educate, because that's the thing. You're not born knowing everything.
Absolutely.
But that's even funny right now. I've read a simple article a few weeks ago about like taking and giving, and people actually, they want to provide any value, and they are like kind of addicted to it. And I believe strongly that asking a question is actually providing value, to be honest.
Yes, yes.
But people very often, they don't get that.
And questions are seen as inexperience or lack of knowledge
Exactly, but they are so addicted from providing the value that they are actually, you know, you are in the meeting and they have no question, or they have no idea how to, let's say, solve something or whatever. And they use ChatGPT to provide a quick answer that is meaningless in that situation, just to provide a value, you know? And you know, providing a value for the sake of providing a value is actually a waste of time, actually. And the simple question, it generates the discussion very often.
Yeah.
Like, and then you explore, and then you... So, like, be mindful how you use tools too, right?
Exactly.
So sometimes just asking why is very important. Like, why are we doing this? Like, stopping actually to ask yourself, like, what's the end goal? Like, why should we be doing this? Maybe we should do it a different way. And actually, you know, trying to understand things by asking questions is also important, because you know all the details, because then when you sit down to do something and you're like, okay, now I have a million questions, but I could have kind of asked them before.
But that's the funny thing, right? Because every single design starts from asking a question.
Yeah.
Every single one, right? You have a golden circle, right? Why, how, what? And you have to actually go through the circle to understand what's the outcome as soon as you understand why, right? So it's a principle, right? And you start from questions. So being afraid of asking a question when the question is the core of everything, it's actually funny, right?
Yeah.
To be afraid of it.
Exactly. I have worked for supervisors and art directors before that are so afraid of asking questions. And I knew that they didn't know the answer for it. But they just want to, I guess, protecting their title and your position. They're so afraid of asking questions.
Yeah.
They just basically direct people to do things without actually understanding the whole thought process. And I think that is leaking into the interactions as well with the team. And then the team seeing that, okay, this guy doesn't know anything and he won't ask me questions and therefore I shouldn't be doing that. So you're setting an example for failure in a way. And I feel like that's why I talk about being in leadership is important, to show that you don't know anything and asking questions, because you want to grow the team. And in order to grow the team, you have to ask questions.
Yeah.
I tell everyone that, you know, I'm not your supervisor. It's just by title. Yeah. I'm here, part of the team.
Yeah.
And we have to work together. I get my hands dirty. I do shot work, you know, because if I do shot work, I understand the problems.
Exactly.
And then I can solve the problems with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for example, like there was a question about nuke ones. And I was like, I knew how to do it, but I've forgotten how to do it because I haven't touched it for so many months. And once I got into it, my artist was sitting around me and we start troubleshooting it together. And that is such a beautiful thing,
amazing.
Beautiful experience. Yeah. And that makes me want to go to work every single day. I'm not going to sit there and just tell people doing things because I'm an art director.
Yeah.
I don't need to touch Photoshop. I don't need to touch anything, right? But that is defining the whole process, right?
Yeah.
That is basically creating a very toxic work environment and telling people that you shouldn't be asking questions. You should do what I tell you, right? Rather than helping everyone, including myself, ourselves, to grow.
Yeah.
So
that's a very common misconception, thinking that when you're becoming a lead, a supervisor, that everybody thinks that you have to be the smartest person here.
You have all the answers, right?
You have to have all the answers. Yeah. But that's not the case. That's not the meaning of a supervisor or a lead. It's completely different idea.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate supervisors, and I'm trying to do the same, where on the meeting, I'm going to say, hey guys, you are the specialists.
Mm-hmm.
You are here to make this magic happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are the specialist of animation. You are the specialist of let's say, creating an asset.
Yeah.
And I want your opinion.
Exactly.
I'm not here just to tell you left and right.
Yeah. That's a true empowerment, like to be very honest. When people very often misunderstand what the true empowerment means, because actually as a manager and director, you actually create the environment for people to be able to actually deliver things that you all agree upon, right? And instead of like providing an idea and micromanage the execution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Micromanage. Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
a
big thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The
exactly.
most important thing to bring people up, to let them feel like they are, you know, they feel good being part of the team, that they're being heard and that, you know, their opinions matter, and also that they actually have, you know, an effect and kind of full on engagement of what the end process is and also talking about it and all that stuff. To kind of wrap up, what inspires you on a day to day? You kind of touched a little bit about it, but I wanted to kind of see like what inspires you after so many years with so much like,
is
you
there
know,
anything that inspires you?
Yeah. I think people inspires me, you know, like I feel like my team inspire me to be a better leader, you know, in a way that, you know, you see them grow, you help them grow. And sometimes people forget what leadership is all about. It's not about authoritative, right? It's not about telling people what to do. Being a leader is basically open up opportunity for people. You know, I'm only as good as I am with my team. I look at hiring people that knows more than I do so that our team can grow, right? So people is my inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perfect.
I think it's a good one,
And
to be honest, over the years, our goals has changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Previously, you've been working maybe in a specific field of animation. And today, our goal is a little bit different. So we have a different inspiration, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And yes, people is one thing. And for example, I'm also, I feel like I want to be perfectionist. I am perfectionist. I'm trying to, I don't know. But I'm trying to get better in whatever what I'm doing. So even as a supervisor, it's not like, definitely, I'm not trying to be the smartest person. No, but I'm trying to be person that can provide, person that can teach, person that can also learn how to do my craft. So I think my inspiration is also my goal, is when I'm trying to just become better at my craft. So maybe books, maybe some talks and meetings like this one, just
Thomas
attending
Art Festival.
Attending exactly places like this. It's a huge inspiration because it's amazing to hear all of the stories and all of those struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I prefer to actually hear more of the struggles rather than success stories, because we always learn on mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I want to hear. I want to hear how they struggled and how they managed to deal with them.
That's a really good one. Like recently on LinkedIn, there are only success stories, right? but the war stories, right? Like how did you manage? Actually, is something that people are also looking for. That's a true inspiration.
Need to really talk about the hardships and actually the things which are sometimes maybe a little bit on the uglier side, on the difficult side. Like I think those people can really like learn from themselves and without going through the same things themselves. Or maybe if they went through something, to see that, you know, there's everybody's kind of going through the same stuff. So maybe there are some ways that we can fix the overall environment or the culture or whatever. Incredible. Right. Awesome.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having us here.
Amazing discussion. Amazing talk.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot for watching. And we hope that you did enjoy this episode as much as we did.
It was an amazing one. And as always, don't forget to comment, like, subscribe, all that jazz. Let us know what you're thinking about the episodes. And as always, let's stay in touch. And we'll see you in the next one.